We're in the studio today, and we've got a special group of people with us. They all belong to one group in common. Can you just remind me, any one of you, what the name of the group is?
Our group is called Raising Our Children's Kids. It's called ROCK.
ROCK. Raising Our Children's Kids.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit.
The other side of the news.
Ignorance grows on the spirit like a tumor. Till freedom is a rumor.
Okay, the topic for today is, what if you are a grandparent, you're retired, you've got a small pension, you worked hard all your life, you want to take it easy now or as best you can, and all of a sudden, you're raising grade school children. So let's just go from my left or your right, and you can give us a name, how many children you have, and if you want to give the age, it might be worthwhile to the listeners at home.
My name is Beverly McIntosh. I'm raising two grandchildren, Rosina, who is 9, and Austin, who is 7.
Are you over 60?
I'm 61 and living on a disabled pension, and it is getting very hard to raise them because the money costs.
Yeah, okay. I'm moving on.
My name is Barbara LaFlesh, and I'm raising my granddaughter, who is 8 years old, Sage, and she has lived with me since her birth, and I am 62 years old.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Earlene Weaver. I'm raising three grandchildren, Rihanna, 12, Jordan, who's 11, and Alicia, who's 8.
Wow.
Hi, my name is Kathy Wood. I'm raising two grandchildren. One is 13. She has an acquired brain injury. And I have a 10-year-old, just turned 10. And I'm 51 in November. I'm young grandma.
But you're a grandma.
But I'm still the grandma.
Okay. I guess the first thing that we should let the listeners know is you're raising these kids unexpectedly on a pension that you got put together for yourself. Right? Who wants to go first? I will let you guys decide amongst yourselves.
Okay, I'll go first.
Then. Okay.
I got Rosina when she was 9 months old from the CAS in Toronto. The mother and the father can't handle her. She's a fetal alcohol child. She has multiple problems with school, with behavior. She's 2 years behind in development. And in her schoolwork, she's 2 years behind, but they just keep moving her on. And she does not have an educational assistant. We are fighting for that at the school, but the board hasn't have enough EAs for all the children.
Okay, can I just ask you, you said CIS?
CIS, Children's Aid.
Children's Aid. Yes. So this is not your grandchild?
It's my son's child.
Okay,
yes.
All right. So just to be clear on that.
My situation is that I have 4 children. It is the child, my grandchild that I'm raising up have custody of, is my second daughter who had many problems when she was a teenager and running to hospitals because of attempted suicides. Finding out that she is diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and it was a long haul. And in this time, my husband left, and so what I'm financially have available to me is an allotment of money, which is $750 a month that I get from Family Responsibility. As well as I've taken early CPP. So what I'm working with monthly is around $1,100. And with raising Sage at this point, it is very difficult because I'm trying to raise her somewhat like I raised my own children, having a little home and having resources for her to enjoy her life.
Okay, so your $1,100 is what you have a month for the two of you.
Yes.
Can you explain to the listeners what you would get without the child, without the grandchild? What would you be living on? Just the $750?
Yes, exactly. But if I didn't have Sage to raise, I would be having employment.
Oh, I see.
Which would, and it has been very difficult because of my daughter's ongoing illness and the fact that it has been very volatile with her going to hospital, or the fact that she is now taking me to court to have custody returned.
Wow.
And is on ODSP. She has opportunities for legal aid. So it has been a huge financial stress, as well as the time that I would have to work is probably from 11 to 2:30, and there really is no employment like that.
How did you get the child in the first place, the grandchild?
My daughter definitely has this mental illness of borderline personality disorder. She knew that if she went into the hospital to have Sage, that a CAS would come and get her. So she was she's a very smart girl in a lot of ways, and has this cyclical illness, and ended up going to a midwife. Didn't want to deal with doctors, and asked me if she could have Sage, her birth, be in my apartment. And I agreed, and went to the appointments with the midwives. It ended up that the midwives came when it was the actual day of Sage's birth, but they felt that it was taking too long, and she ended up in the hospital. And the CAS did come to the hospital and asked Brenda if she planned on keeping Sage. And she said, yes, I've arranged that my mother, we're going home to be with my mother, and she's going to help me raise up Sage.
Can I just ask, you said CAS came to the
hospital? CCAS, actually.
CCAS. Why did they come to the hospital?
Actually, I guess this happened at St. Joseph's Hospital, and the diagnosis for borderline personality disorder was at St. Joseph's Hospital. So I imagine that if ever Brenda was going to conceive a child or have a birth in Hamilton, that it was flagged.
So she's flagged in the system because she's had problems that are obvious to others.
That's correct.
And how has she been? Well, let's get into the daughter who has this problem. I mean, you've been raising this daughter with this problem. How has the system helped you raise that daughter? Or is there anything could you get any help? Could you do anything? How long has she been sick like this?
We didn't know what was wrong. It's been since she was 16 years old that we've had a lot of difficulty. She was very bright, we thought, in school. She got great marks. When it came to grade 10, everything fell out of place. And it's been since that age range, 15 years old, we thought maybe she had bipolar, mood disorders, whatever. And with the pressure that she was putting on herself, obviously, with the suicide attempts and just the movement, moving from place to place and relationship to relationship, and that eventually, because of the suicide attempt, she ended up in hospital. And it was a Dr. Bieber at St. Joseph's Hospital that diagnosed her twice with borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And in other hospital locations, they diagnosed her with schizophrenia, bipolar. But the fit of borderline personality disorder seemed correct.
Okay, so this is how she was flagged in the first place and why she didn't want to have a child in the hospital, why the CCAC came to see about what was going to happen to that child after it was born.
Exactly, and they did come to the apartment. But I just want to mention as well that there is no help in my situation, and I found since being a member of the ROC group that all of the grandparents, even the scenarios are different. The bottom line is there is no help, and as a group we realize that at 16 years old, I could not get any information, medical, psychiatric information, without her consent.
At 16?
At 16 years old. It was a social worker in the hospital system that decided that Brenda should not live at home because it wasn't in her best interests. They pushed us aside, placed her in a lodging home, and this is when the problems escalated because of her relationships in psychiatric hospital and friendship she made there, the movement between lodging home to lodging home, the fact that there's 16 to 90-year-olds and street people and people from the jail systems, that she just got lost. And really the ultimate story is about lodging homes is it is owned by private investors. Some of them are doctors and nurses. The fact is, it's the cook who doles the medication, feeds the people, and there are, I didn't see any social worker that was taking her off, getting the help that she needed. And it was from a relationship that she made at another lodging home with someone with mental illness from the jail system that Sage was born from.
All right, let's move on and hear the beginnings of some of these other scenarios that put grandparents into this position. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next.
Okay, Arlene.
Okay, I forgot to mention I'm 70 years old and raising these three children. When I took them on at 59, I had to I had 2 days to run out to get out to Victoria, British Columbia, to get my children from the court system. Because of drug and alcohol abuse with my daughter-in-law and my son, the children were taken from them. And I was told to come right out on the Tuesday. It was called Sunday, and I had to be out there Tuesday night for a court case on Wednesday. And so we made arrangements. We got out there, and we got out to Victoria, and we went to the court. And one thing good about British Columbia, Alberta, and Quebec is they have the Family Law Act. So I immediately, the judge told me about that, and I immediately signed for the children. And I received the children about 2 or 3 weeks later after the CAS in Hamilton checked my home, and I had to go through a police check.
Mm.
And so we came back home, and we had to prepare a house for two children at that time. And I've had them for 11 and a half years. And Leisha was born in Peel, and I got her when she was a month old from CAS. And the mother we haven't seen in 8.5 years. The father contacts every so often, but I get no financial help from them at all. No financial help from anybody. We took early retirement. We had 1 year and before this phone call. But I wouldn't change a thing because the children I love them dearly, and I'd hate to see them lost in the Children's Aid cyberspace somewhere, never to be seen. And so we have very little choice. We have to take the children or let them go, and never to know where they are ever again in their lifetime.
So when you had to fix your home, did you get any help?
No, didn't get any help. Had to use our RSPs. We had to get all the furniture. We had to get everything. We had to get two cribs in our bedroom. And we only had 2 or 3 days before we had a visit from the CAS. Plus get a police check.
Wow. Okay, so you said BC, Quebec, and what other province?
Alberta.
Alberta.
And it saves a lot of money because when I had to go to get Alicia, we received Alicia after the first court case out of Peel. And then they remanded it and put it to the Hamilton Family Court system. We had to go every 2 weeks to a month for a court case that kept getting remanded for a whole year before we received her on permanent custody. So, how much does that cost the government to run all those court cases when out in BC it's done in one act?
This was dropped into your lap literally after you were retired.
Never would I have dreamed of it. And even when I took the two children on, I figured, 6 months to a year, they'll get their act together and come and get their children. It never happened.
What was wrong with is it your daughter or your son?
It's my son, and it was my daughter-in-law at the time.
And so what is the problem with your son that we have this, you have these three kids?
Drug and alcohol.
Alcohol problems.
Yes.
Okay. In which province is he residing?
He's residing here in Ontario now, and she is out in British Columbia.
We have different provinces, a national situation.
Yes.
If there were better, I don't know, support programs for your son in this province, considering he had kids.
Yes.
I mean, do you think any of that would have helped? Is there a lack of that? Or
because I remember when he was, we had a lot of problems with him growing up. And so I think he tried to get into a rehab here when he was 16, and they told him to call him back in a year and a half. And in a year and a half, he was completely gone. It opened the marijuana where they said it was safe and to worry, you're not going to become a drug addict. But that's just the start.
Yeah.
And then you can't, they're incapable of raising these children.
And so they still have them, and who's monitoring them, having them? Is he flagged in the system like Beverly's daughter was?
No, not at that time, no. And the one boy has FASD, so it's running into a lot of problems, again, with the education, trying to fight for him to get a proper education, gets no EAs.
So the big problem you have is, besides the financial burden, what would be the first big problem that you would want to see changed?
I'd like to see something done about FASD in the government right now for education. There is absolutely no system for FASD, and it's similar to autism. And the only trouble with autism, they get help, they get an EA, and there's only one in 150 cases of autism, but in FASD, it's one in 100 children are being born. And there's no medication, no medical help in Hamilton.
Wow.
Right now, they're opening, I think next year, they're opening an FASD clinic, and Nancy Hall is trying to put this into place. But to get a true diagnosis, I have to go to Toronto. I finally got accepted at the Sick Kids Hospital. Well, I haven't got accepted, to be truthful. They phoned me up and they said, did I see my daughter-in-law drink during her pregnancy? I said, well, she was out in BC. I said, no, I, you know, how could I see it? And then I talked to my husband for a few minutes, and we remember going out for a vacation for a week. And then I remember going to a friend's party, and they partied, and we took the baby home. And we took her home because they were too drunk to come home. And I still haven't been accepted.
But at least they called you to say, to ask the questions.
So. That's what they did.
Wow. So what's next after that?
Well, I'm praying that they said they'd have to go before a panel. So I have to follow up with the mother's risk at the Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto and see what's happening, because I haven't heard anything, and that was in July.
And there's nothing here in Hamilton. You have to go to Toronto.
You have to go to Toronto. I go to Dr. Barry Stanley, who is recognized as the foremost FASD expert here in Hamilton, and he helps every 2 weeks. I go and I talk to him, and he lets me know that there's not much hope with Jordan. Some do manage to get a job when they get older. I don't know what he's going to do when we're gone, because a lot of these FASD, 60% of the population in jail are people that have not been diagnosed with FASD.
Wow. Okay, let's get back to it. We need to move. I know Kathy's been waiting.
Yeah.
Kathy?
Okay, my name is Kathy Wood, and I've been raising my grandchildren since 2003. I was an employee at Walmart. I was working in Oakville as a support manager, hoping to go up into management. And my granddaughter was in a motor vehicle accident, and fortunately she was wearing her bicycle helmet, so she did survive it. In order to get her to come back to my house, we had to do some repairs because she ended up having to have a tracheostomy. And so she was staying in a residential home in Hamilton. And I was sort of pushing with the lawyers, like, you know, I wanted her to come home. And they told me I had to give up my job in order for her to come home.
Okay, so let's take a little step back. You were working at a good, decent position.
Yeah.
Suddenly they had this accident. Why did you have to have your granddaughter? What happened to your daughter or your son to make this happen?
Well, at this point, my daughter was still living at home. But she has some kind of undiagnosed problems. I'm not sure. Since she's been about 14, 15, mood swings, violence in the home, argumentative to the point where she does become aggressive. She says there was no drug or alcohol involvement, and I can't say she did because I don't know. I don't know. Eventually what happened was because of her aggressive behavior, she struck my 13-year-old son in the face with her fist, and that was the end of it. I had lived on eggshells for long enough, and that was the last straw. And I called Children's Aid Society and told them what had occurred and that I was no longer going to tolerate this in my home.
Okay, your daughter became so violent you had to put her out. How old was she, and what are the laws about control over that?
My daughter, that would have been 5 years ago, so she would have been 25.
She's an adult.
She's an adult.
So where does that put you?
Well,
I mean, you have no control over her, do you?
No, I don't. But I've never had control. Even when she was about 13, 14, she lost her father when she was 2 of cancer. And she used to say things and draw some pretty disturbing photos. And when I took them to her teacher or to the family doctor and voiced concerns about these pictures that she was drawing, like one was a grave site with 3 graves, one being her deceased father, one being her teacher, and I guess she might have wished her teacher dead, and one was for herself, which caused me concern, thinking that maybe that was like a suicidal...
Yeah, so you have to flag that.
But they didn't flag it. They didn't feel that they're... They felt that I was maybe over-exaggerating the situation and that she was being creative. Okay. But she was not creative. She was.
That was pretty dark, huh? And she was 2, you said, drawing these
things?
Well,
at that point, no. She lost her dad at 2. That was probably about 7 or 8.
7 or 8, she's drawing these dark things. So that's a suicide watch, and I'm surprised that the school or the teachers at the school weren't paying attention.
Or the family doctor.
What year was that?
Oh, let me see now. That was probably about... Early 1981, maybe somewhere there.
I'm just wondering if things have maybe changed since 81.
I don't really think things have changed that much. I think that people don't listen to parents enough. We live with these children, and we know what's going on in our child's lives, right? So when they don't listen to us and they don't respect what we're saying, okay, maybe we don't have a PhD in something, but we definitely we're in tune with our children.
Yeah, you know your child.
Yeah, you get a gut feeling about what's going on. And I knew there was something wrong. I went to these professional people to ask them to please, you know, do something, help her. Mm. And no.
For years, probably, right?
Oh, and then as she got a teenager, it really manifested itself. It got really bad.
Was she thrown out of school for being mood swings or violent in high school?
She didn't go to school. She wouldn't attend. I would I went on a straight night shift job when she was about 12 or 13. So I would be home in the morning to drive her to school, and she still didn't. I would drive her, and she'd go in one door and out the other.
We have a question here that flags myself. If this child is 12 or 13 years old and she's not in school, where's the truant officers that chase her around or call
you
up?
They don't do that anymore.
They don't do that?
No, they can't. They don't do that anymore.
So
I guess it costs money.
Nothing is done by the school.
Nothing is done. No, you see it all the time.
I'm amazed at that, to be honest. I'm amazed.
I mean, she's not the only child. I mean, children are not valuable things in society. It's quite sad, really, you know. But that, you know, she was 16 when she had her first child. So when you give a girl 16 the right to have a child and go off on mother's allowance and raise a child, they're only children themselves, and they're obviously troubled to begin with. That's why they're in the position they're in. Mm. And then you sort of, the grandparent, you either step up to the plate and take accountability, or bad things can happen if you don't.
Okay, so how many grandchildren are you taking care of, or how many children are you taking care of right now?
I have 2 now.
So one is your son?
Oh, I have 3 then. My son is 17.
Okay.
Now. And my older granddaughter is 13. She has an acquired brain injury. And my younger granddaughter is 10, and she has a learning disability also.
Why do you think?
The youngest one, they call it central auditory processing disorder. I had to fight really hard with the Board of Education, but I managed to get both of them in a special class. So they're in a class of 12 children with an EA. And okay. So they're fortunate that they have that. The other grandparents who have children with FASD, they're not so fortunate. It's very hard to get this.
So yeah, if you haven't got the right label, you don't get the help.
That's right.
That's what it sounds like. All right, so...
you got to prove that label, too.
How is this, I mean, you were, now we can get back to, you said you had this job, and all of a sudden you were facing having to take care of these grandchildren because of the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
What how did that change your life?
Well, now I don't have a lot of time for friends. My friends are...
But let's talk about the job that you had to give up. How did they help you? Were they supportive?
Well, Walmart was really good to me. You know, I had... given about 7 years of my life to Walmart. I started at the Eastgate store, and then I transferred myself out to Oakville to take on a position as a support manager. And I quite enjoyed my job. I like working with people. And the opportunity to move up was there, so I was looking forward to that. And then my granddaughter was placed in this... home for children with brain injury while my house was being renovated, because she was living with me. So was her mother and her sister. And I was told more or less I had to give up my job in order to get my granddaughter to come home.
So if you wanted to take care of your granddaughter,
yeah,
because she needed full-time
care. She needed full-time care.
You, of course, had to stop your job. And who told you this?
Right. Well, it was... basically, the behavior therapist that was working with her, the consultant, and the lawyers that were working for my granddaughter. And it was probably, I would imagine, I'm not 100% sure, probably coming from the direction of perhaps McMaster Hospital, because there was like a round table of people there that dealt with Kayla. And I'd say maybe... up to maybe 10 people who were there who were educated in, like, physicians, psychiatrists, occupational therapists, and stuff like that. So I think that they seen things in my daughter that I knew but wasn't ready to accept.
In your daughter?
In my daughter. And so I did give up my job. I did stay home.
So I guess what's happening here is they're assessing the daughter's behavior,
for her own child.
Right. Like, so they're saying to you, your daughter can't raise this kind of grandchild.
That's right.
You have to stay home full time and take care of it.
Exactly.
Did they say to you that there was any possible help? Was there home care help? Was there any kind of behavioral therapist help or in the home?
Any help I did get was through the accident adjusters, like the insurance adjusters. And this is right now in a court case, so I don't really want to...
So it's your insurance.
It's
the insurance on, because it was a car accident or something.
That's right. That's right.
But no social services.
No social services, no.
Has there been any social service involvement in your situation?
In my situation,
yeah.
No. My granddaughter, she gets money from the insurance, and I take from that. It's in a trust fund, and I take from that to run her household. I myself don't have a designated income. My husband is retired. These are his step-grandchildren. Their first, like their real grandfather, died at the age of 26 from cancer. So
for support system, there is none.
The Rock Group.
Before we get to the Rock Group, and I'm glad you mentioned that, I just want to get the last story here that we haven't really given any time to. So,
hello, I'm Beverly again. I have, besides Rosina, who I already talked about, I have a young little boy named Austin.
Just wanted to start at the beginning. Your son had a problem. He was at what age when he had his problems?
He was 16 when he left home. And for 10 years, I didn't know where he was. And every time I heard on the news that somebody his age had been killed, I thought it was my son that I'd be getting a phone call. But I all of a sudden they show up at my house on the day after Christmas. They came to me and said that they had this baby in the hospital. She was born 2 pounds.
Wow.
And at that point, we didn't know she was fetal alcohol and that she probably wouldn't make it. And the children's aid had been in to see her and had taken them her away from my son
and
his wife.
Okay, so they suddenly show up saying, "Mom, we got this child that's in this terrible condition, and children's aid is going to take this child away from us. Help us," basically. Is that the scenario?
Yes. They thought that maybe I could take the child into my house, and then they'd at least be able to come and see her and maybe the mother learn how to look after her.
Wow.
So I accepted this, but she didn't come to me till she was 9 months old. We would go to Toronto to see her, and then they would bring her to my house for 1 week.
And so they had control of the baby for a while.
Yes, yes. The mother and the father were not capable of looking after these kids. They were always drinking, smoking, and probably drugs. So the children's aid were never going to let them have her, although the mother still thought she'd be able to get this child. When she finally came to me at 9 months old, they switched it to the Hamilton Children's Aid, and she started working with Bobby Joe. Bobby Joe was supposed to come to my house every day to learn how to look after this child.
So you've got the baby.
I have the baby now, who has multiple problems. At 9 months old, she was only on a bottle. She could not eat food yet. I had to take her into McMaster Hospital for feeding and swallowing tests to see what her problem was. And she has it was really hard for her to eat. Eventually, when she got about a year and a half, we could start giving her Pablum.
And when did somebody find out the child had fetal alcohol syndrome?
I took her to see Dr. Wendy Chung, who is a pediatrician, because I kept saying to my family doctor, "There's something wrong with this child. At 2 years old, she could not sit up unless I had her between my legs or was holding her. At two, she should be at least trying to walk." So she finally sent me to see Dr. Chung. Dr. Chung saw her, and she said to me, "Your granddaughter's fetal alcohol." And at that point, I had never heard of fetal alcohol before, and she explained to me that my daughter was developmentally delayed by at least 2 years, that she probably will never have a job. She's going to have multiple problems at school, plus multiple behavior problems, which has increased since her brother came around.
So you've got two children now. Your son had two kids.
Yes, with the same mother. And he was born in Hamilton. The children's aid apprehended him and took him to McMaster, had him tested, took his hair follicles to see if he was fetal alcohol. And the test came back positive, and the mother said, "I never drank when I was pregnant."
Now, Hamilton Children's Aid obviously had something on the ball to intercept that baby when it was born, the second one.
Yes. When she was pregnant, I called the Children's Aid, and I told the worker that I had that she was pregnant. And so she put feelers to all the hospitals that when this baby was born, it would be apprehended. Now, the night he was born, I called the children's aid. I don't think I was the only one, because she called me in the morning and she said, "I've apprehended him. His name is Austin." And she took him to McMaster Hospital to be tested. He was in there a week, so I brought him home from the hospital when he was a week old. And the mother was supposed to come every day to learn how to look after this child, because she wanted him to. She fought with me for Rosina, which cost me over $10,000 in court to get Rosina. The reason she stopped is when she heard that she was fetal alcohol, she didn't want her anymore.
She knew how much that would cost her.
Yes. Then when Austin came along, the children's aid were very much involved with both times. And with this time, they gave her a chance. She had to go up to Shadoke and learn how to look after a baby. She did that. when she could go. She only went a few times, but she did go. But she was supposed to come to my house and practice with the baby with what they told her at the group. And she never came. The first time with Rosina, I didn't keep track of how many times she came. But I got a little smarter on the second one. Every time she came, I wrote down when it was and what she did. The one time she came, she walked in my front door, and I said, "Do you want to go see the baby?" "Well, I'm going to go on the back deck and have a cigarette." He was crying, so I picked him up, took him out to her on the deck, and I said, "Would you like to feed your child?" She says, "No, no, no, I don't want to." This is the mother of the child who has no feelings for this child, but she wanted him so she'd get more welfare.
Does she have a problem, do you think?
Yes, she does.
Alcohol, mental illness, what do you think?
I'm not sure about the mental illness, but in my mind, yes. She was 14 when her mother died.
Okay.
She was living in those, you know, the buildings, the abandoned buildings in Toronto. She would point out to buildings when we were going to Toronto to visit Rosina. I was squatting in that building. I was a squeegee kid. I was begging on the streets. And she never said anything about drugs and alcohol, but I'm sure she was into that, and I'm sure she was into prostitution at
the time. She was homeless, so.
She was homeless.
Okay.
Yes. Now, when she was in Hamilton, I found them a nice little place, and I ended up having to pay off that man when he kicked them out because they didn't pay their rent.
What you're saying is your son had problems.
Yes, he did.
You didn't see him for years, so you had no way to help him. He
yes.
just took off.
He knew, like I always said to him, you know, "I'm here for you if you need help." And I was working when my kids were little because I was separated. And I worked as a nurse in the hospital, so I worked shift work. So sometimes I was home in the daytime. Sometimes I wasn't. Sometimes I was working night shift. I had to get babysitters in because they were still very young when I started going back to work. But I had to do that. It was either go on welfare or go to work. And I didn't want to be on welfare, so I went to work to raise my kids. And I feel that I wasn't there for him. When he was young, he was 3 years old. So, you know, like that's a very important time for children that you need to be there to help them. But I needed to have the money to live on.
Yeah, it's a catch-22.
Yes.
But this is the fine line that moms walk.
That's right. That's right. I had to have babysitters in there to come and sleep overnight with my children because they were still young. He was 3, his sister was 5, and his brother was 8.
It's tough.
And yes, it was. It was very tough to make do with living, paying rent and everything. But I made it through. I finally got a chance to buy a house, and it was a much better area. And my 2 older children have no problems. One's a teacher and one's a fireman. But my youngest one, he wouldn't go to school. He just ran away, and I never knew where he was for a long time.
I hear every mom says that they tried to do their best, but sometimes, you know, you just get a kid that gets lost, and
That's
there's
right.
nothing you can do. And, I mean, as a society, this is why we're supposed to have some social policies in effect, because it does take a town to raise a child. One person cannot do it all the time. You
That's
can't
right.
juggle all the balls in there all the time. And it, you know, not everybody has an extended family that can call up aunt this or uncle that or grandma this. And in this case, you know, the same story from every one of you. You know, surprise. You know, you didn't expect it. And now you've got this overwhelming burden.
That's right.
Overwhelming
That's right.
burden. And so what do you think there is lacking as far as some supports? What could you do with, Bev?
Well, I've been living on a pension. The 2 children, because they're fetal alcohol, I do get a small amount of money for them. But I have put a lien on my house and owe $130,000 on my home, which was totally paid for.
Oh, wow.
To support these children. And he has very much behavior problems. Last year, he actually was suicidal from the medicine that the doctors had him on. I had to sleep on the couch so that I could hear him at night. He was taking knives, and he was slashing his mattress. And that was the final straw. Like, he was destroying my house. His room is totally destroyed. He doesn't have a door on it because he broke it into pieces. His bedroom was trashed, ruined.
So what happened? How did you get help, or what happened?
I called Contact Hamilton because I was hysterical when I saw the knives. I thought his sister, her room was right across from him.
Mm.
And the two of them do aggravate each other and get each other high because they're both fetal alcohol children. They don't know how to control their tempers or anything. And I thought, if she got up in the middle of the night and he had that knife and she said, to go back to sleep, you're keeping me awake, he would stab her.
So what did Contact Hamilton do for you?
They tried to get a hold of, because I had been working with Shadok for years with the two of them, and then they got into school, so then Shadok wasn't working with me anymore. So she called Linwood Hall, and Megan came to my house that day.
What is Linwood Hall?
It's a home that takes children that have very bad tempers and
violent children.
Violent children. And they do have some that live there, and they have the outreach program.
Okay.
So they brought Megan to my house, who tried to help us get through this part of our problem.
So he could stay at home.
So he could stay at home with me and work with him. He was on Ritalin-based drugs, and fetal alcohol children cannot take them. It made him so he wasn't sleeping. He wasn't eating, and over a year, he just kept getting more and more and more violent. So finally, I couldn't handle him. So when Megan stepped in, we got up to Shadok to see Dr. Goldberg within a week. And he took over. When I told him all the drugs he had been on, he said every single drug that Austin had been on was a Ritalin-based drug. And he said, fetal alcohol kids can't take it because Ritalin makes them go high. We want them to be calm.
Who's giving out these drugs to him in the first place?
It was the pediatrician.
And so do they not know, or what is the problem with the pediatrician?
There's only certain drugs that they have out there for these type of children.
Gotcha.
So she started with all the drugs, and the final one just, it was so strong, it just, okay. The Ritalin came out in it. None of them had worked, and we just kept trying. And she said, I don't know any more drugs. So Dr. Goldberg said he had been on Risperidol once before, but he was with a combination of something else. So the other drug interacted more than that one. So he said that's what he has to go on. He needs this drug because it's going to calm him. He actually ran away from school last year. Him and another friend, he went to go get his medicine at noon, and he decided he didn't want it. He ran out of the office, and this other child that's in his class said, come on, let's go. They ran away from the school. The principal told me they watched him through the windows till they couldn't see them anymore, and then they disappeared.
Nice.
The secretary went to find, she said, can I go find them? So she went to find them. She found them in my basement. I was up at Linwood Hall at that moment talking with Megan and my workers to see what we could do for Austin. The secretary isn't allowed in my house, but she saw them through my basement window. So she called the principal and said she found the children. The principal called the police. The principal went there, and the secretary went home. The principal went in my house, which she's not supposed to, but I don't mind that. She went in my house. She found them. They had trashed my basement. Everything that was down there was on the floor in my rec room. She went to the laundry room where they were standing in my laundry tubs, and they had, that's my craft room, and I have this carousel of paints for crafts, and there's about 100 of them. They both had a thing of paint in their hand, and the principal said, I want you to do the right thing and follow me out of here. They didn't go, and she walked out. By the time the policeman got there, there was paint everywhere. The floor was so slippery when I walked on it when I got home, I almost fell.
At least you had a school that cared and somebody followed these kids.
If it hadn't been for the secretary, I don't know what my house would have looked like. The policeman went in and carried them out one at a time. He carried them out, so he got paint on his uniform, put one of them in the squad car, came back and got the other one and carried that one out, talked to them, and at that point, the principal had gone home. She called up one of my workers, and for some reason, I said, answer the phone. And she was telling us, well, we're at Linwood, and Megan's face was like, what's happening here? How did these kids get away from the school? There's no way they should have ever got out of the school. They had an EA at that time, and the EA stayed in the school too. They should have got them before they got off of school property, actually.
So you're saying the EA, because they're in that special class, dropped the ball here, and if it hadn't have been for the secretary looking out of the window to see a couple of kids taking off, nobody would have been able to, nobody would have done anything.
No.
Nobody would have noticed the kids were gone. It might be a different scenario. So you're lucky in many respects, but you're pointing out a problem here.
Yes.
Now, what is the problem with the EA? Maybe too many kids? We don't know the answer, do we?
There's too many kids. Well, the year before, Rosina, I didn't even hear about this till one of the EAs told me she was missing for 2 hours at school. They did not know where she was. They did not call me. And if the EA hadn't have told me, I wouldn't have even known she was missing. She came back on her own. They don't know where she was. She was in the school. The school principal, we have a new one this year. He is fantastic. He is willing to work with us. The other one wouldn't. I had somebody wanting to come in and talk to the EAs and the principal about fetal alcohol. She refused. The new principal now, he says, I will welcome anybody to come in, talk to us. We need to know what is wrong with these children.
It seems to me, I mean, there's a constant thread running through here. And, this isn't something that the parents did wrong. This is drug and alcohol abuse. It's just the genetics of the whatever happens to the child, whether stress triggers it or locations triggers it. But each story sounds pretty much the same to me. You've got a son or a daughter that there's no way you can get a hold of that child, and there's not enough social support to help you. You just have to let them go and hope for the best. And 20 years later or whatever, pops up this tremendous problem. You're not just grandparents raising grandchildren. You're raising grandchildren with problems, serious problems.
Yes.
Every one of you, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm stuck with medicine to buy for $300, sometimes $400. And when OW was taken off us, we've got no medical coverage.
Okay. Let's talk about ROC. Obviously, you found each other through ROC. What is ROC? Where does it meet? What does it do? And how did it happen in the first place? Because that's your support system so far.
Well, I'm a co-founder of ROC. There was an article in the paper, the newspaper, The Spectator, and they were talking about a grandparent raising a child. And we phoned up the number in The Spectator, and we got a hold of a group that was in Toronto called Grands. And we went to one of their, they had a big get-together meeting, and we went there, and I met a woman that was had a grandchild, was raising two grandchildren, actually, and she lived in Fawn Hill, and she had started grandparenting again. So we started, I started going out there, and she had met another girl from Hamilton, Mary Lou. And we were introduced, and I was driving 4 or 5 people every week to St. Catharines for meetings. So then we decided we'd open our own groups here in Hamilton because we felt we needed some help here, and we needed each other to help. And through that group, we've learned so much because there's nobody there to tell us where to go for anything. We've had to learn everything on our own, all the contact people. We've been very fortunate with getting some very good speakers coming to our groups, like Nancy Hall and Contact Hamilton.
Okay. When does ROC meet? Where can people find ROC?
It's at Kiwanis Club, and we meet the first Wednesday and the third Wednesday. It's between 6 and 8 o'clock. And on the second Friday of the month at Kiwanis at between 9:30 and 11:30.
9:30 at night.
Morning.
9:30 in the morning to 11:30 in the morning. And
yes.
The 6 to 8, is that p.m.?
Yes.
6 to 8 p.m., first and third Wednesday.
Yes.
And second Friday, 9:30 in the morning to 11:30, you say?
Yes, okay. That's right.
And the Kiwanis is where?
It's at on Ellis Street. It's across from the center.
Do you have an address and a phone number for that?
They can call myself, Arlene, at 905-528-1919.
Again, please?
528-1919, and that's Arlene, E-R-L-E-N-E.
Okay.
We're listed in the Cope book, and we're listed in the Kiwanis book. And we're also listed in McMaster Shadok.
Okay. How long has this group actually been running now?
We've been running at Kiwanis for about a year and a half. And we've had a group for about 5 years when they had the old self-help center. But the government stopped funding, and they closed it down. So we're just meeting for coffee in between.
Okay. We're down to our last few minutes, amazingly enough. Is there some tips that you can give listeners who might be in the situation, some of the stuff that you've learned? Where do people go? Can you throw some of that stuff out?
Well, we're having problems with we used to get some help, financial help, from Ontario Works for our grandchildren. Not for us, for our grandchildren. And Hamilton, for some reason, has decided that we're not worth funding because they cut us off in the year 2006. And we're the only community. If we moved to Brantford, Guelph, Niagara Falls, we would get funding. But in Hamilton, we get none.
This is from the municipality.
This is the municipality. Now, when we talked to the municipality, they told us, no, it's not their problem. It's the provincial. So we went and we saw Madame Millier, and she said it's not in her realm to change it. It's up to the community.
It is up to the community.
That's what she said. So we've been going back and forth like a ball and getting nowhere. And Hamilton started this when they cut off grandparents here, and now it has started again in another community in Ottawa. So it's moving.
Okay, this is something people don't know about.
Yeah.
To get some assistance for these children, you can get out of OW, the Ontario Works organization.
It's called Temporary Care Assistance.
Okay, Temporary Care
Assistance. And it's only pays $6 to $8 a day. And if these children were in foster care, they'd be getting, especially with the FASD, they'd be getting funded with about probably $3,000 or $4,000 a month.
It's per child. How much a month, then, is it?
It works out to, I think, just over $200 for the first child, $190 for the second.
Oh, it scales itself down.
Yes.
So not all children are treated equally.
And the third. And you used to get a clothing allowance, and you used to get back-to-school allowance.
Yeah, let's
and
talk
nothing,
about that.
Absolutely nothing. And it cost, everywhere you turn, there's a cost to the school system. Even grade four, I got a list of items that were needed for grade four. And besides the backpacks, the pencil crayons, the new shoes for school, now they're coming home with loose leaf binders they need. They need paper for the binders. They need mathematical sets. They need all kinds. There's a whole list now.
Now, they did make a speech. I mean, there was a presentation by the Social Services Department of Hamilton at the library saying that they would have this backpack to give all the children that would have some basic supplies in it. There was a place to pick it up. I think it was the Salvation Army. That was for people on welfare and OW, I mean welfare assistance. You guys wouldn't have heard about that.
No, we didn't. But we did. I heard about it just recently that they were all bright red, so everybody knows who's got one.
And they probably didn't have what you need because nobody knows what your child needs until the child goes to class.
No, well, you have to buy pencils. They even name the brand. They are the type of pencils they need. The rulers, they want everything now for school.
Even an eraser we had to buy, erasers.
Yep. And it's specified. You can't just... This is ridiculous.
They want HB pencils. They want...
Yeah, okay.
And that was a grade four. I've never... My other children that were in grade four, I've never had to buy four, other than their normal pencil crayons, markers, and...
Does everybody get the same problem, Kathy? You got to pay for stuff?
Oh,
yes. My son, now, see, I'm not working, But I'm fortunate enough to have this insurance money that I can pull from, because my son attends Cathedral, and so therefore he needs uniforms. I just spent $89 on his art supplies. I had to go out to Dundurn to the special art store to pick up these special supplies.
If you didn't have it, how would you pay for that uniform?
Well, I own my home. I'd probably have to sell my house before I could go on welfare. I live off of whatever monies I made. You have to be destitute, I imagine, to get welfare. It's almost like you're being punished for having done the right thing.
Yep.
That's what it feels like. People are being, you know, give those kids up, put them in the care of CAS, and go on your merry way and forget they ever existed. And some people maybe can do that, but you know what? We can't.
The Roundtable on Poverty, they're talking about Hamilton being the best place to raise a child. They have these meetings. Does it help you people?
We've showed up at a few. We've spoken at a couple of them. And we've gotten a lot of different people that's come up, and they're trying to help us get organized. We're trying to organize a group. And Paul Miller's office has been very good with us. They've backed us. They've gone to the Parliament buildings, and they've mentioned our group.
Okay, so they're giving you advice. They're advocating on your behalf to change some legislation. Is there any financial help?
No, they haven't given us anything.
We need it now. No, we need it now. We can't wait. We need it now.
And we're getting older. I'm 70. How long am I going to live? And, you know, the part was my one daughter gave me, granddaughter, gave me a little bit of trouble, so I had to send her to my daughter's. And because I thought it was better she was in the country, and for her to raise her. And this isn't the mother of the children either. And she got the child out there, and in a month she had a check from Simcoe, Norfolk Simcoe, for benefits for her that.
But not
that
grandma.
Grandma. She got dental. She can take her to the dentist. I have to take my kids to the hygienist. We're being
That's
punished.
Right. I just wanted to interject one thing regarding the Roundtable on Poverty. Really, the only help that we see that we're getting is from the group, the Hamilton East Qantas Boys and Girls Club. They allowed the Rock group to meet there. It gives us our children access to social programs, skill-building benefits, the pool, learning how to swim well, cooking lessons. They have really helped us. Mm-hmm. And I really don't see that we've gotten true help from the Roundtable on Poverty.
Qantas was around before the Roundtable.
As well, regarding Mr. Paul Miller, if it hadn't been for him, we would have no voice at all. He is really the locomotive that put it on the floor of the legislature in Toronto. He's the one that made the appointment with Madame Millier. Bev McIntosh was on a program, a W5, with Sandy Rinaldo, and presented this on that W5 taping about the situation in Hamilton in 2006. We expect, as grandparents, as just citizens, we're expecting from these people to be honest and straightforward and just tell us, instead of playing the game of moving us back and forth from the province to Hamilton, from the Hamilton to the province. We now have an opportunity to meet with Joanne Priel.
I was just going to mention her name.
the general manager of the city of Hamilton. Again, she did send her person she placed in charge, Jillian Hendry. We did go to that meeting before we went to Madame Millier. And they said, Jillian Hendry said right out in the meeting, the TCA, Temporary Care Assistance, is of no big deal to the city of Hamilton. And we our mouths all dropped. And we had Todd White, who was from Paul Miller's office, because he wasn't available that day. He was in Toronto.
Paul Miller is which government?
He is NDP.
Thank
He's
you.
The MPP NDP.
Thank you.
So I spoke up and said, If it's no big deal to the city of Hamilton, return it to the grandchildren, who it is a big deal to, because it's not only that little minimal amount of money, it is really the benefits, which all of us don't have available for our grandchildren, like dental or prescriptions. And it is a big deal. And the provincial representative stood up and said they can't now because it's already decided that grandparents with custody, these children are not applicable to this.
This makes no sense.
It doesn't.
So the key is you push and you push. And if you can get your group as a delegation into city council, one of the committees or one of the branches of city council, then the press can come and public can come and they can hear what's going on. People don't know that the grandparents are being totally cut off and the kid is suffering. And these are kids that really have problems. This is a hole in our system, a terrible hole in our system.
I'd just like to say, too, you know, it's quite sad that we have a government, a municipal government, who likes to announce that this is a great place to raise children, and that we have to actually even be here to tell you about our concerns about our children, that our needs fall upon deaf ears, is quite sad. What they're trying to put out there, that this is a great place to raise children, then why do we have to spend so much time trying to do the right thing for our children?
Okay, well, we're at the end of our hour, ladies. It's been absolutely fascinating. We've just touched the beginning. Thank you, one and all, for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Redefining Radio.
Radio.